Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, and Daniel, it's good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Well, very good. I want to revisit an incident that is staying in the news.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a little bit more information having to do with Manchester and what the politics of the situation is, and could it possibly be related to international interference in other people's business? And that, of course, we're talking about blowback.
Yep.
Could this be a form of blowback? Is it just an unintended consequence? Is it something that could have been predictable that things like this could happen? And as tragic as it is, it seems to me that we shouldn't be all that surprised, because there have been individuals who have talked about the consequence of our foreign policy, and I think we're starting to see this. And you've done a little bit of research on Abadi, the 22-year-old Libyan, but born in the UK. But there's a story to be told about, you know, why he was there. You know, they just didn't decide, oh, you know, Libya is a bad place. We're going to go and enjoy liberty, and we're going to enjoy the fruits of the prosperity in Great Britain. It wasn't quite that simple. But they, his family did have a reason for leaving, and that was that, Gaddafi didn't like radicals, and the family was already leaning in that direction. They were willing to use violence, and they wanted to get rid of them. So they knew that just like Saddam Hussein would crack down on that. That's not saying Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi were doing the right thing, but under the circumstances, that's a reality. He didn't like anybody to challenge him, and the people weren't the people who believed in liberty challenge him. The people that were challenging him were radicals and caused a lot of trouble. So people were defensive, and I understand that was probably the major reason his family did leave Libya and move into UK, setting the stage for what happened, this tragic event. And yet, if it isn't understood exactly what brings this about, see, it's sort of like a doctor looking at something and seeing the disease and saying, well, you have an infection, I'm going to give you an antibiotic and with this hope it works, you know. You want a diagnosis. You want to know what's going on. And I hope we can provide a little bit of insight to the diagnosis of this, look at the cause rather than just superficially looking at the event and say, oh, it's terrorism. What we need is a real world war on terrorism. Kill them all, throw them all out as a solution. I, of course, have argued against that case, but I'm afraid this will just, feed more into that philosophy that what we don't have enough of is a war on terrorism, and that's why these things are happening, instead of it being just possibly a consequence of bad judgment on the part of not only the United States government, but maybe on the part of European governments, maybe on the part of the UK government. If that is the case, that doesn't excuse the evil that some of these people, you know, are involved in, but it also might get us to understand what we must do to prevent these incidents from coming again.
Yeah, and the mainstream media, the neocons, the interventionists, the humanitarian interventionists, all the people who supported these interventions, they don't want us to talk about the fertile ground that was created by these interventions for someone like an Abedi to go over and train, to radicalize, to view the rise of radicals in eastern Libya. They don't want us to do that. And if we happen to dare mention U.S. policy, U.K. foreign policy, and how it may have contributed to at least providing the fertile territory, then it's how dare you focus on that. It's this person. It's Islam. It's Muslims. That's the real problem. They don't want to face this. But the fact of the matter is, it was predicted in a way, but we didn't want to listen. Gaddafi, as you point out, was never a great friend of liberty. He never was at the Mises Summer School. But of course, you know, when he came and bowed down to the U.S., a lot of people in the U.S., the neocons, loved him. He was their favorites for a while. You remember in the IR committee.
Right.
But Gaddafi, when the radicals, it started rising in eastern Libya, the U.S. was supporting them. He said, I'm telling you guys, these are radical Islamists. These are terrorists. If you keep supporting them, there's going to be trouble. And actually, here's a this is an intercept. This is from Tony Blair's phone call with Gaddafi.
This is really key. Pay attention to this one.
Colonel Gaddafi warned Tony Blair of Islamist attacks on Europe. if they continue supporting the people and say, oh, no, he's just trying to survive. And it doesn't mean he's a good guy, but it just means he understood better what was going on in his own country.
Yeah, but he's not making a threat.
Yeah.
He's not making a threat. He's saying this could have bad consequences, and it turned out he was absolutely right.
And there you have it, exactly.
Right. No, and, you know, it's one of these things that it reminds me a little bit about Saddam Hussein. You know, he was a bad guy. We had to get rid of him. But Saddam Hussein, how much Al-Qaeda and radicals in IS was in Libya, you know, under Saddam Hussein? Yes, Gaddafi was a bad guy, but he was our guy and this sort of thing. And it was the situation that existed. But for us to have these attitudes, if we just go in and we kill Gaddafi and get rid of Saddam Hussein, everything is going to improve. But our point is, things get worse.
Yeah, and you know, what do we know about this 22-year-old Abedi? From press reporting, we have a good idea that as Benghazi was liberated by the U.S. and the U.K., i.e. thrown into the hands of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, he was there on the ground. He was a young man at the time, obviously, but he was there. He watched this happen. They say this is where he began to be radicalized. So he spent time in Libya. He actually was there just 3 weeks ago. And he also, while in Libya, is said to have slipped into Syria, possibly to train in, you know, fighting the jihad. So maybe he was even trained by the U.S.
But once again, he wouldn't have been going back there if we had not helped get rid of Gaddafi.
Exactly.
I mean, we set the stage for this. And then when people say that some of our policy enhances the strength and benefits to the radicals, oh, they say, well, you know, you're bashing America. But that's a reality that happens right now because we pretend, just like ever since way back in Afghanistan, that if we align ourselves with these bad guys, these real radicals that'll tear into the established leadership, then they will be fighting our battles. And it's on again, it's all of this that they'll do it. And it provided no miracles in Syria,
yeah.
You know, and Libya, and you already mentioned, Libya is related to Syria. You know, as Libya fell apart, all of a sudden we found that weapons and support went to the radicals. Then they started targeting Syria and things escalated there.
A lot of Libyans went over to fight in Syria. They fought the jihad. But you're right, it's nothing new. You know, the U.S., the U.K., its Western allied partners believe that you can support the worst of the radical Islamists to overthrow secularists. And then they act surprised when they become bad actors on the international scene.
Yeah, but, you know, they're providing a pretty good answer. I mean, the neocons are responding, and this is what we have to do. We have to go after that country that spreads radical Islam, that participates in this and does all this great harm. You know, it's those Iranians. Those
yeah.
are the bad people. They're the only ones, and I believe it was honest, you know, comment when they said they were, this was a tragic thing, and they sympathized with the people who suffer from this bombing. I really believe that is the case. There may be a little bit of politics involved, but still, you know, they just had an election. Of course, neocons said that's not a real election, and our guy lost. They were supporting
the
a radical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our guy lost. So this is not a real election. We only spread democracy and endorse it when it supports the people that see the CIA handpicks. And of course, we used to just check with Hillary to find out who it was that we were supposed to support, and the CIA take their marching orders. But it's a tragic situation that we're constantly involved in. And we've said so often they never seem to learn, and other people suggest maybe they don't want to learn. Maybe there are people that believe they can thrive from the chaos, and you could almost apply that same principle to here at home. You know, cultural Marxism causes chaos. It doesn't solve any problems, and yet there's constant stupidity in our universities and more conflict. And so some people may do it deliberately. I like to try to give people the benefit of the doubt and say, no, it's just stupidity. It's stupidity, and it's money, probably, and it's power, and it's the ineptness of government. You know, they endorse certain people. They have no basic moral principle. How could they have a moral principle that designs a policy with Saddam Hussein that once gives them nuclear technology, the next time we orchestrate the total destruction of the country and opening up the door to radicalism, which has lasted now for going into the second decade.
Yeah, I think Iran's condemnation of the attack was genuine because the same attacker that attacked in Manchester, he follows an ideology that wants to destroy Iran. You know, this radical Wahhabist viewpoint has its birth, as we discussed yesterday, in Saudi Arabia, ironically, where the president was. It was nurtured there, it was financed there, and it's a mortal enemy of Iran. It doesn't say that we endorse Iran, but we don't have to live there either. Their policies are their own. But when's the last time Iran attacked any Western interest or anything in the West with the terrorist attack? I don't know when it has been.
Yeah, and just think statistically, several others, which are, again, but not a huge number. But if you take all the attacks on Americans and the Americans killed, you know, in the wars, attacks by people who we would just call radical jihadists, and that's why it's their religion that drives them to killing, it has nothing to do with our policy. If you add all that up, I mean, it comes out that the numbers are huge, the number of people that have been killed, but it's a reflection of the policy rather than the fact that they're spreading their religious beliefs. So I think that we need to get people to understand exactly how these things come about, because if policy, and I've said this so many times, if you don't change the policy, whether it's economic policy, you know, Keynesian inflationism, central banking, you won't solve the problems. But if you don't change the policies of our foreign affairs, we're going to have a continuation of this. It's going to, every time we switch, you know, and think it's, you know, well, we supported him, but we don't now. We supported when he was a friend, but now he's turned against us. And you on again, off again. This is why interventionism, and this is why pragmatism and utilitarianism is so bad. You can go anywhere you want. It's a philosophy of, you know, we make our decisions on the instant, and we play on the idea that we are the moderates. We're going to bring this group together with this group. But what if this group is horrible, and this group is, you know, has a philosophy of liberty? You know, just giving half of the pie to the people who hate liberty and love tyranny is hardly should be it should not be considered a victory.
It's not a good compromise. You know, the thing that the mainstream media and the neocons won't allow to sink in to the people who consume media are that the radical jihadists are Sunnis. You know, they're not Shia. They are the Sunnis. But I thought maybe we could play a little game, because I know you like games. But
As long as I win.
That's right. You will. It's already fixed in your favor. No, but this is interesting. So the UK, I think, is pretty well known, is the number one surveillance state in the West. They passed in November 2016 the Investigatory Powers Act. It was called the most sweeping surveillance powers in the Western world. Basically, it's Big Brother. They've got eyes everywhere. They watch everything you do, monitor everything. But listen, I just put together four things, even though they see everything. Number one, this guy was known to the UK police and intelligence. They knew about him. Two, family members in the UK warned officials that he was dangerous. Three, as we mentioned, traveled to Libya, traveled to Syria, two trips that had to have been known to intelligence services. And number four, and we even have a graphic because it's funny, but it's not funny. Here's what he did in his own house, if we can call it up. According to the UK Independent, he flew a terrorist flag from the roof of his own house. So what more does he have to do to make... So all of this surveillance of innocent UK people, so giving up your liberty for security?
Oh, well, it's obvious that law wasn't strong enough.
I mean, they didn't get
they
enough.
They only had 98% tyranny and, intrusion in people's liberty. What we need is 100%. No, it's always the same thing over and over again. No matter how much it fails, they just do more of the same thing. And the same stupidity exists in in economics. They just continue to do it over and over again, expecting different results. But, it was Ben Franklin that warned us. It's a famous warning. If you give up liberty for safety and security, you're not going to have either. And at least for the weekend, the British didn't have, they've given up a lot of liberties, and they're not safe and secure. But what about us? We're not in charge of Great Britain. We're not in charge of Europe. We can, you know, give opinions, but we should have no skin in the game,
yeah,
you know, no money involved, no troops involved, no interference. But we do have a responsibility here at home. What can we learn? Can we learn that interference overseas just may produce something called blowback? And the American people ought to realize that understanding the principle of blowback and assuming responsibility for our actions is not un-American. You know, I have said that patriotism should be defined by a person's willingness to critique one's own government. And if you couldn't do that, you're not being very patriotic. Our original patriots were the ones who were willing to say, I want to overthrow tyranny. I want to have a better system of government where individual liberty is recognized. So people aren't willing to recognize this, and they're conned into believing that, they can't say anything. Oh, you're against the troops. You're un-American. You're unpatriotic. And they win that game because guess what? Who's in control so much of the propaganda? But they're losing some of that control. We're able to reach more and more people. Ideas are more powerful than the armies and even the armies of the conventional media. So that is why ideology is crucial. It has to be spoken clearly. People have to understand that there's no expectation that somebody who believes in liberty is ever going to achieve perfect liberty for everybody, because people are not perfect. And so perfect liberty doesn't occur. Quite a bit different than those who have this elitism, believing that people are incapable of dealing and taking care of themselves. And I had members of Congress that, in a very serious, good-natured way, well, they won't take care of themselves. We got to take care of them.
Yeah.
We're their caretakers, but they believe they're the smartest in the world on foreign policy. Very often that we see an intellectual discussion on one of the 3-4 major networks about the insanity of the neoconservative philosophy? I mean, it doesn't happen.
No. And then they criticize people that go on RT when they're at least allowed to talk about this.
Right. How would you conclude this little discussion we have?
I would steal from what you just said. I would say recognizing that this is blowback does not excuse the actions of the person who hurt other people. On the contrary, it's to try to prevent future such occurrences. Recognizing what contributes to this kind of situation will actually help people and save people's lives.
And I, of course, would agree with that. Very good summary. And I want to thank our audience for tuning into this Liberty Report. And although this is the third day we have mentioned this incident, it's an important incident, not only because of the tragedy, you know, of the people killed, but today we emphasize the reason this has occurred and what is behind it, and trying to get people to understand where the prevention comes from, what we must do to change things. And if we continue to say that what we need is more money for the military and greater surveillance of the people, like the British did to their own people, and not realize it doesn't work, won't solve the problem. So our suggestion simply here is think about avoiding this by having a foreign policy designed to mind our own business, provide a national defense, and to make sure that we're open to discussion and diplomacy with other countries, and certainly trade with other countries. Set a good standard, and maybe that will have a greater influence on bringing peace to the world than anything that we do with spending more money in the military. And I often have used in the past, and I think it's a good analogy, is just think of the tragedy of the 60s, which I lived through and was in the military at the time. The tragedy of the Vietnam War, which was combined with what the French did. Millions of people killed, and tragedy, and all the people. People are still suffering from Agent Orange and the wounds of Vietnam. At the same time, all that fighting for 20 years and all that death and destruction, guess what? When we said, enough is enough, we're getting out of here, things improved dramatically. Much more was achieved in peace than in war. And people have to realize the argument for peace is a powerful argument. It makes sense. It has a moral basis to it. And that is what we should be championing. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.